Welcome to Lesbians Who Write with Claire Lydon and T.B. Markinson. Conversations about writing and lesbian fiction. Join us as we draw back the curtain on the writer's life.
Welcome to episode 32 of Lesbians Who Write, and this week we're going to be talking about our revision process. And joining me, Claire Lydon, is my co-host, the romantic, the rakish, yes, the remarkable, T.B. Markinson. How are you today, T.B.?
Ooh, rakish. I got like a cool word this time.
You did.
I got like a badass one.
Yeah.
I'm feeling pretty badass right now, actually.
You are badass. Not at all ropey, which is what I was toying with, but I left it out.
Ropey? What does that really mean? Ropey?
It's a myriad. It's a myriad of things. So today I'm coming to you from London, a little bit croaky, a little bit flu-y, coldy. So you have to excuse my bunged up nature. But I'm here. I'm here for you, TB, and I'm here for you out there, dear listener.
I admire your dedication because I just, when we were prepping for this call, just told Claire that she looks like she should just go back to bed and take a rest. So I do admire your dedication to recording this podcast.
No, nothing should come between me and Lesbians Who Write. No, because I'm not writing at the moment because I feel like shit. But, you know, I'm here. I'm here and I'm queer. Get used to it, everyone. So the bus said to me sometime. Anyway, I'm babbling now. I'm babbling. How's your week been?
My week has been really, really busy, actually. The last time we spoke, I mentioned that I uploaded Reservations of the Heart to Amazon, and the release has gone, wow, the release has gone really well. This is the one I was nervous about, and I wasn't sure what to expect. Holy shit, it has just done really, really well. Like, I have no other words for it besides fucking fantastic. But, and then this morning, it's still September, but this morning for the month, I've already just tipped over 1 million page reads.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fantastic news. The reviews are rolling in. So while that's going on, I've also been really busy because I am knee deep in the edits of the, holiday romance I'm co-writing with Miranda McLeod. While I've been celebrating ROH release, I've been screaming into the black void of, oh my god, when will this book finally just come to an end? Because we've been working on it. Seems like forever. It's one of those that we were, since we were passing it back and forth with two authors, like, you would be, like, knee-deep in it, and then you'd hand it off for a bit, and then you get it back, and so it's just, like, one of those things that seems never-ending, but we have the final edit coming on October 1st. So we have about, 5 days to finish this? And I think we're going to squeeze right under that deadline. And it's going to be a squeaker, but I think we're going to do it.
Squeakers are often the best. I just want to roll back. Let's roll back to a couple of episodes ago when you were saying how stressed you were about ROH, as we like to call it, Reservations of the Heart. How you were worried. And yet, it's gone great, and the release has garnered many reads and many reviews. So what have you learnt, TB, would you say, from this review, from having a little mini freak out and doubting yourself? What have you learnt?
I should say that with every release I kind of freak out. I actually just sent a newsletter out to my subscribers yesterday saying that people have to like talk me through the hitting that actual publication button on the KDP dashboard, because I freak out. It's one of those things, like you said, like you put a little piece of yourself in each story and you're releasing it to the world, and then you're waiting to see if you are accepted or rejected. So
you see, the thing is though, and I know this is really hard to do, but the fact that you just wrote the book and put it out there is a triumph in itself, in its own right. And whether it had had 1 million page reads or not, it would have been a success. And I know sometimes it's hard to realise that. But actually, it's not how much it gets read. It's like how you feel about it. Maybe you weren't feeling that brilliant about this one. So the fact it's getting read and read and read is the proof that you wanted. But generally, you should just be really proud that you put a book out there.
And that is what I tell all authors when they come to me when they're freaking out when they're publishing. And I talk to them very calmly and say, you know what? you should celebrate the moment because you just published a fucking book. That's what I tell them. But I did. I felt good about this book even before I released it. I liked the book. I liked the story. But it was different from my normal lane of romance. So, and I originally was going to release it under a different pen name because it was different. And then I decided, fuck that, because it was too hard to build the website and everything. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to be honest and say it's me. So all of it was like, it was just a whole new world, even though it wasn't a whole new world because it's just published in a book. And Claire almost had a heart attack right there. Her phone. She has a new phone, and I guess she doesn't know how to work it yet.
This is all true. Apologies for that. I was just telling TV beforehand that I've just got a new phone, and I thought I had it on Do Not Disturb, but clearly not. It just reminded me that I'm going to see a Tottenham game at the weekend, but it's a bit early. It's like Thursday, and the game's on Saturday. It's a little, you're a little bit early, phone. Just, you know, remind me on the morning, not 2 days before. I can't remember this shit that far ahead. That was me just giving my phone a lecture, by the way.
Maybe the phone knows you're not feeling well and you might need more prep time for
yeah,
this.
Yeah, definitely. No, but that is, it is interesting, isn't it? Because it is what everybody should remember. And it is true, but it's very difficult to remember that when you are putting a book out there. However, I would say as well that you should trust yourself by now, I would say. And again, hard to do. But, you know, because you've put enough books out there to know that your voice is your voice and people are going to like your voice. But the thing I hadn't realised, what you just said, is that it's a little bit outside your lane and you were going to publish this as a different pen name, but now you've decided to put it out as you. So what are the differences? And clearly, whatever differences there are, it's really hitting home. So you should do this again and then again.
I know. I've been, like, studying the differences because it's my first standalone in a while because right. A lot of my books are in series.
Yeah.
So that was different. It's a standalone. Mm-hmm. It's an age gap, which I did pen an age gap with Harper Bliss, but I had Harper Bliss on the team who is, like, the queen of age gap romance. Mm-hmm. And it's a medical romance, which I am not a doctor, but my background actually is I used to work at a medical school, so it's mostly told from the medical school viewpoint because I had more experience with that. I don't know what it's like to be a kidney transplant doctor, so I skewed it more towards the medical school aspect. So mm-hmm. I wasn't sure if that would hit readers because I didn't know if they wanted the whole like emergency room scene action, but it's interesting because with the whole medical school action, it's just a whole different ballgame because, like, I mean, you're creating doctors for the future, which is kind of a rewarding experience to be part of, to be honest. They're all so young and so bubbly and have so much energy, and I hope they keep that. And I hope they keep that dedication to medicine throughout their careers. I really do wish that. It would make the world a much better place. These characters are not based on anybody, but they're based on some of my experiences. Right. And I did write a guest post for I Heart Lesbic saying how I had a connection with Aurora, who is the medical school scheduler, which is a job I did, which was a very stressful job. And so some of the experiences in the book are based on things that actually happened when I was answering the phones. So okay. It was one of those things where I was able to throw a lot of my I changed it a bit, so it's not like exactly what happened, but I was able to throw a lot of my experience into it.
Do you think that that's what has hit home? Or I would say, just as you were describing it to me there, and you have sent it to me very kindly this week because I needed a new book, so I said to TB, send me Reservations of the Heart. I'm going to have Reservations of the Heart this week. Obviously, when you were describing it to me, you said age gap and you said medical. Now, I know those two are buzzword bingo tropes, like, you know, bing, bing. Those will get readers reading. So do you think it's that, or do you think it's like some kind of you unleashed yourself with your writing because you thought it was going to be a different pen name, so maybe it's a slightly different side of you came out? What do you think?
I think it's all of that, actually. I think you're spot on with that. I think when I was writing it as a pen name, I felt a little bit more freer to throw a bit more of myself into it. So I think it might sound more genuine. Yeah, as we know, age gap in medical romance, I mean, those are always big sellers. There's a reason there that a lot of authors pen them. I guess when I started it, I didn't actually think of that part. I just started it because I had experience with it.
Right.
So, and it was part of a novel that I'd started way back in the day that was totally different format. And I was like, well, I can't really make this work. But if I made these tweaks to it, then I can make it work. So I do have another piece of news.
Go on then.
That what happened this week. I was in Cambridge in Massachusetts, and I was just wandering around. And I don't know if you remember when you were getting ready to launch A Taste of Love, the third book in the Village Romance series. Oh, no, wait, was it the second book?
Second.
I can't remember.
Second
book. And it was an ice cream shop owner, and you mentioned a flavor honeycomb, and I had absolutely no clue what that was.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was Googling it. A honeycomb ice cream shop in Cambridge popped up, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I should go there for Claire. And then I totally forgot about it. So I was wandering through Cambridge, and I was like, no destination in mind. I was just wandering around, and all of a sudden I looked over, and I was standing right in front of the Honeycomb Creamery ice cream shop. And so even though I just had a massive Mexican meal and I was stuffed, one of the reasons why I was walking, because I was trying to make, you know, just burn off some of this meal I indulged in the middle of the day, I went in and I got some ice cream for you.
Oh.
I had some ice cream. I did not. I sampled. They had a flavor for London Fog. I'm like, oh, this is perfect. It's for my British friend. It's a honeycomb shop. I should try this London Fog. And I hated it, so I did not get that flavor.
Sorry, did you say London Fog?
Yeah, that was the name of the flavor. And it
that
was.
That does not sound like an appetizing flavor.
I mean, it wasn't terrible. I didn't hate it. But I didn't want a whole serving of it.
Was it grey?
I think it was. It was grey because it was Earl Grey flavor with lavender.
Ah, okay.
So, I mean, it was interesting flavor. It was, like, good for a sample for me. I'm more of a, as we keep mentioning with the ice cream flavors, I'm more of the sweet fan. I ended up getting, I think it was salted caramel or something like that. And I got a kitty size cup. I got a photo we can put up. I got a kitty size cup that's, like, smaller than my hand. It cost me $4. Ripping me off, but it is Cambridge, Massachusetts, so that's what happens.
Good. Well, I'm glad you went in, but you didn't have any honeycomb ice cream, though.
I didn't see the flavor. I just think it's called that.
What are you Americans like? Just get some honeycomb going, people. Earl Grey and lavender, that's very floral. I don't think I'd be down for that ice cream flavor. But well done on trying the London Fog, but yeah, it's not appealing. You should go in and say, this is not appealing. British people like nice flavours too. So, well, my week since we last spoke, which has been a little longer than normal because I went to Milan. So I went to Milan for a week or 5 days, and that was jolly, jolly good. And she said, sounding very British, it's your London talk of London fog. And I also had some ice cream in Milan because obviously Italy. Is famed for its gelato, which is ice cream in another. Everyone always says, you can tell the difference between gelato and ice cream. If you can, let me know, because it all just tastes like ice cream to me. Anyway, so I went into a gelato shop and I had fig and mascarpone, which was lovely. TV is making a face at me now, like, what? Pizza Express, do you know Pizza Express? They do a mini dessert in their restaurants, and they do one, and it's mascarpone cheese with figs and syrup, and it's one of my favourite things. So fig and mascarpone, I was all over that. And then I had two lots of coconut and one lot of coconut and pineapple. Now, I wouldn't normally eat this much ice cream, as you know, but I feel like I had to as I was in Italy. Also, I was there with my wife, who loves ice cream. So she, every time we passed a shop, she was like, should we have some ice cream? So I said no quite a lot, but also said yes. So I can confidently say that Italian ice cream tastes like ice cream, not gelato. Dan, maybe it's the same thing.
I would love to know what listeners think of that, because I've only been to Italy once, and I can't remember if we actually had gelato or not. Wow, that's really bad of me, because I love ice cream even more than, well, you don't like ice cream, really, so I love ice cream, and you don't. You've had it, like, more than me.
I tolerate it, yeah.
Gelato, good, bad?
Readers, listeners, let us know your experiences with gelato or ice cream. So yeah, Milan. So we had a lovely time walking around Milan. We had lots of delicious pasta. We had lots of delicious meals. I had amazing gnocchi with tomato and mozzarella foam. It was just delicious. We went to some amazing restaurants, but also. And we did lots of walking around Milan, which is a lovely city. But the main thing was, it was Milan Fashion Week while we were there. And we stumbled into a few Milan Fashion Week things. So And of course, we just blended in because we were so fashionable. Not. But we also passed a few models. You know, like you have this image of Milan or any kind of fashion week going on and there'll just be models and shizzle everywhere. Well, it's true if you actually go to the fashion district, which we did. So we went to see a couple of fashion week exhibitions. We could have gone into a few fashion week parties that were open to the public. But we also passed quite a lot of models. And my God, they're tall. I mean, I know that you know that they're tall because they're models, and I'm quite sure I'm about 5'3" on a good day. But these models, they're like over 6 foot and they're like super duper skinny. We walked past this woman and I think my head was like where her legs ended, which is not something rude, everyone. Get your mind out of the gutter. But yeah, she was just stunning and like it was like she was on stilts. So it really was an amazing week to be there. And everywhere you went, even not in Fashion Week, in our hotel, that everybody there was there for Fashion Week. So they were just talking about photo shoots they were doing in the bar and things like that. So, yeah, it was quite interesting because London has a Fashion Week every year, but I'm never really around it. Whereas in Milan, you just couldn't get away from it.
Where did they do the Fashion Week in London? I can't remember.
I think it's the week before Milan, because I think that they roll. They seem to roll because I know it's in Paris this week. So I think they okay. do. It was the week before.
But where are they centered in London? Where do the events take place, do you know?
No, I've never really looked into
it. I don't either.
I imagine it's in Mayfair, if I'm going to hazard a guess. But I've never looked into it, but I know where they do it in Milan.
Funny, we know more about places we visit than our own cities.
It's true, it's always true, isn't it? But apart from that, I had to do a bit of work in between times as well, before and after. So Made in London is currently with my proofreader, and that goes out to ARC readers next week. So that's nearing its final destiny. I'm aiming for a live date of October the 16th, so I need a couple of weeks to go to that. So that's really exciting, and my proofer's loving it. She's 50 pages in and sent me a message saying that she loved it, so that's good. And also, You're My Kind, we've been talking about the audiobooks and how much pain we've gone through. It is out now. I think it's out on quite a lot of platforms. I was going to wait to announce it till it's out on all the platforms because I've gone wide with this one. But I think it's reached quite a lot already. And if it's not reached any streaming services or stuff, keep an eye out for it because it will be there quite soon. But we are drawing the veil back on the writer's life, or the curtain, the veil, whichever. Depends which kind of fabric you're into, really, doesn't it? And how much fabric you want. We're drawing the veil, the curtain back, and... So I launched You're My Kind, and it was in a bit of a rush because I had to go to Milan for Fashion Week, obviously. I was down on some lists, you know, name's not down, you're not coming in and all that. And I got the name of the narrator wrong.
It's
kind of understandable, I think, because the narrator, now let me get this right, is called Nicola Victoria Vincent. And so I put her down as Nicola Vincent Victoria. So just, you know, just a thing to let you know that these things happen.
Now, is this the same narrator you sent the wrong file to?
Yes, it is indeed the same narrator. She probably thinks I'm a complete doofus. And in this case, she'd be right. You know, who am I to say she's not? I sent her the wrong file and then I uploaded the book with her name wrong. So I did message her yesterday, just to check. This is, did I get it wrong? She said, yes, you did. I said, I'm really sorry. I think I was thinking of the movie with Julie Andrews, which is one of my favourite movies, Victor Victoria. And so it was just in my head. So anyway, I've re-uploaded it to all the wide platforms. I emailed ACX that they distribute to Amazon, Audible and iTunes. And they said they're going to fix it within 5 days. So, you know, just to sort of let you know that things go wrong all the time in your writer's life. Little things happen, little hiccups. Don't worry about it. It's just all in a day's work. Nobody will probably know unless I hadn't just pointed it out on a podcast. But I just want to say it just to let you know that all these things are fixable.
They are. And like that, things do happen. And it happens with every job. No one's perfect. And so you just kind of have to roll with the punches, laugh about it, and then pick. Look, what we say in our family is when you fall down, you pick yourself up, brush off the dirt and keep going.
Yeah. In our family, we say, don't pick yourself up, dust yourself down, start all over again.
You should start a singing career when you have a cold.
Okay. yeah, so now I'm back from Milan. We got back on Sunday and it's Thursday now, so I've been back a few days. And I was just sorting that stuff out. And I've took a couple of days off, so I've only been working a couple of days. But now I've come down with some kind of cold. So it's been a slow week, but I have been doing things like all my launch preparation for Made in London. So I haven't been idle. I have been doing things. But yeah, I'm not writing at the moment because I'm just I did read through the 30,000 words I did of the book I started before I finished off Made in London. Is that right? Yeah, can't remember. Yeah. Yes. So I read through that while I was away on the plane there and back. So, you know, always working. And then yeah, this week I've just been a bit ill. Oh, and I went to the dentist yesterday, and the dentist said my teeth are brilliant and I've got no fillings. That'll be £100, thanks.
Do you normally get, like, where you have to do fillings at the dentist?
Not really, no. Generally not.
I've never had a cavity.
Wow. I used to have a lot because I used to eat a lot more sweets. Since I eliminated, you know, not completely sugar, obviously, curly whirlies need to be eaten. Since I eliminated more sugar, strangely, my teeth have got better. It's amazing, isn't it?
Oh, lesson for the kids.
Yeah. We're not just drawing back the veil stroke curtain on the writer's life. We're giving life advice, everyone. Don't eat sugar, your teeth will rot. Right, let's get on to comments, comment monitor. I've got none. Have you got any?
I have eight.
Oh.
So first off, we had Lynn. She emailed my author account and just simply said she enjoys the podcast. So I always appreciate those messages. So thank you, Lynn. Bryce Oakley, a lesbian author. She nearly spat out her coffee learning I don't watch The Great British Bake Off, and then she asked me if I don't like puppies, rainbows, or happiness. So apparently my comment that I don't watch that show was controversial. And I have mentioned it to a few Americans who are in America, and they were appalled as well that I have not seen an episode. So I think I need to correct this.
I would say you do, post haste. We're currently halfway through the current series of GBBO, and it's gripping stuff. What did they just do? They just had 20s week, and I think next, I can't remember what next week is. I think it's dessert week, so who will go? But Priya stayed this week, which was a bit of a shocker, because I thought she didn't deserve to stay, and Helena deserved to stay instead, but she didn't. You have no idea what I'm talking about, do you? But, you know, everybody who loves the show will know. They'll all be agreeing.
Well, I apparently need to get on this bandwagon because I don't want to be known as someone who hates puppies. Who hates puppies? So, Melissa Torres, a lesbian author, she shared a funny little exchange she had with her wife on Twitter saying, her wife asked, "What's that thingy you listen to with two women about books and stuff? It's really good." And she was referring to our podcast.
Good. And as we've said, it is about books and stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, we should just use this as our tagline.
Yeah.
Books and stuff. And then Jax Meyer, also on Twitter, another lesbian author, she was asking, she's asking for advice, or someone was asking for advice about platform building. And Jax was kind enough to recommend one of our episodes where we talked about what we know about publishing now and what we would do differently and everything. And then Jax also sent us an email, and I'm going to kick this question to you briefly because you have more experience in this. She wants to know, it was our episode about going wide or staying with Amazon, and she wants to know how to get paperbacks wide. Amazon prints hers, and she didn't know that you can get paperbacks wide. And so I think you've had more experience with Ingram Spark. I am just dipping my toes into that.
Yeah, and maybe this is something we'll come back to, actually, and do a podcast once I've done it, because I've only uploaded... Basically, getting your print books wide, you have to put them on Ingram Spark. The problem is that Ingram Spark only don't use exactly the same cover measurements as Amazon, even if your book is the same size, so you have to get your cover done twice. Don't ask me why, which is why I am just in the process. It's on my board of things to do. So once Made in London's out, I will be doing that, and then I can fill you in some more, but... for the moment, I'm just dipping my toes as well.
Okay, so our next comment is from Mira on episode 30, when I mentioned that I was unsure when people tagged me on Facebook if they actually want me to respond or anything. And she was kind enough to say that, yes, they do. And if all I want to do is hit the like button, that is perfectly acceptable.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of pressure sometimes of how to respond to certain comments. So And then we have a comment by Fuzz that she sent to our email. And it had a question about sex scenes. When is too many sex scenes? And when does, if you have a lot of sex scenes, when does it tip over into erotica? And I'm not sure if there's an actual count. Or, I mean, erotica more is, obviously, there's going to be a lot of sex in erotica as part of the actual building of the story. I would be hard-pressed to, like, put a number on things.
Yeah, I think you'd be hard-pressed to put a number. You see, in my head, over 3 or 4 is, to me, verging on erotica. But I've read supposed romance books with, like, a lot more than that, probably double that in. And I would maybe class them as erotica. But I suppose it's to do with your story as well. I don't know. I don't think there's a number.
I don't think there's a number either. And also, I know, well, with my, like, sex scenes, they've moved the story forward. They're part of the building of the story. They're not just like, oh my gosh, I haven't had a sex scene, slap sex scene in here. Because, well, I think I've mentioned on previous episodes that writing the sex scenes is kind of hard on me because I'm a bit of a prude. So when I include a sex scene, it's there for a purpose. And I was cringing the entire time I wrote it and when I had to edit it. And then one final comment is from Donna. You get a shout out on this comment, Claire. She LOL'd your use of Thunder Cunt. That one is resonating with listeners. Thunder Cunt.
And I like that you said it twice.
I know. I have to, you know, we should embrace it. We should embrace that one.
Maybe that should be our new tagline. Book stuff and Thunder Cunts.
Oh my God, I'm picturing the t-shirts now. Donna also said, which was a very nice comment, she said, listening to our podcast continues to encourage her to put pen to paper. That just warms my heart to hear.
It does.
That's a wrap with the comments. And now on to our main topic for the day. What's our revision process like? So, Claire, I'm going to put you in the hot seat. Mm. What's your revision process like?
So my revision process, I would say it's changed quite a lot over the years. And there are certain things that I have done that I don't do now and vice versa. However, shall I take you through a revision process for a book? So the first draft I write in Scrivener, and then as soon as I've written the first draft, then we're into revision, aren't we? So Scrivener is a, if you don't know what that is a writing tool for writers. And we'll talk more about that another episode. Look it up if you don't know it, but it's basically a very good writing tool and I'd recommend it. Better than Word. But anyway, I write the first draft in Scrivener and then I leave it for a little bit. I used to leave this for longer, but these days I don't leave it for quite as long because I'm going to go through a couple more times quite quickly. So I might leave it just a day. Then I read through the first draft on my laptop using Scrivener and I fix the things that don't make sense and I swap things around. And I'm not really looking for, if I see typos and things, I'll change them. But I'm more looking for structure and pace and plot and all that at this point. And there will be a lot of things that don't make sense or shouldn't be where they are. One key thing I've taken to doing recently that I didn't, maybe I did this in a slightly different way, but what I do now is I just open up a file and I call it open boxes. And these are all things that begin throughout the, so a thing that a character does that needs to come to a conclusion later in the story. So maybe something that happens in the beginning that I need to call back to right at the end, which is a, you know, a good tactic to do. So I'll have a file called Open Boxes and I'll write down what the characters have done. And then I'll know by the end I need to, if I haven't closed that box, I'll need to go in and close it. Or if at the end I've opened a box, I need to go back and foreshadow that box. Does that make sense?
That actually is, listeners, that is a top tip. I don't call it open box, but I have the same thing where I have a running sheet next to me where I'm writing stuff down that I have to address by the end of the manuscript. And so that is something you don't want, plot threads that just kind of fizzle out and readers are like, what happened?
Yeah.
What happened to this thing? So it is a top tip that Claire is giving you. Yeah. I might have to start calling them open box.
Yeah. I think I got that from the Story Studio podcast. They call them open boxes. And I thought, oh, that's quite good. And he said he makes a list and then closes all the boxes. Sounds neat, doesn't it? And again, this is something that I didn't know for quite a long time. I mean, I suppose I knew in my head that this had to happen, but probably I've left things open in earlier books. Now I try and close them all because I write them down and make a note. It's not rocket science. Once I'm at the end, once I've done all that and I'm pleased that the second draft is done, then I send the document to my Kindle and I read it on there. And because this is a really key stage as well in revision, because it's a different experience reading it on your Kindle, you tend to read it more as a reader than you'll still be the writer and you'll still be making notes, but you'll see different things and you'll see repeated words more, I find. That happens when you read it on a Kindle or you read it on a hard copy like a print proof. And you'll see things that don't make sense. And there'll still be things that don't make sense and things that need to be shifted around. I normally end up with about 250 to 300 notes of things on a Kindle. And you can just make these notes in your Kindle. Maybe that takes about 2 days. Because, you know, you don't want to read it. You could read it all in one day. But I'd suggest over two. Do something else for the other half of the day. And then I go back to my laptop very quickly. So it's fresh in my mind. So, like, because I'll just be writing broad notes. So I'll remember what it was. And then I'll do all those edits. And once I've done that, then it goes to my first readers. That is, one of them is my wife. One of them is another author friend of mine. And one of them is another key reader. So I'll give it to at least two of those. And then once I put in all their stuff, it goes to my editor. And then I wait till it comes back from my editor and I add in all the comments. And that could take up to a week because there'll be structural typos and things like that. But I might have to shift things around. So I want to take in the comments and I want to sit on them, see if I agree with them, because you don't have to do everything your editor says, but take it in. Sometimes about a week you can normally do it, maybe 2 weeks. It depends how much resistance you've got to A, opening your editor file and then B, thinking about it, and C, thinking about what you need to do. But there's no timeline. I mean, I'd say I can normally get them done within two, quite often within one. And then I make the final alterations and I send it to my proofreader. And normally at the same time, I send it to my ARC team. So I tell my ARC team it hasn't been through a proofreader. And then say I give them all 2 weeks, so by the end of 2 weeks I'll get it back from my proofreader and back from my ARC team, and so I'll know there'll be things that my ARC team pick up that my proofreader doesn't, and vice versa, because one person can't pick up all your corrections. That's a really key tip as well. Don't expect your editor to pick up everything. Don't expect your proofreader to pick up everything. They won't. That's why it's good to have lots of pairs of eyes. Don't throw your proofreader out with the bathwater just because they didn't pick up three of those spelling errors. No one person will, and that's something you learn as well over time. I think I've discarded a few proofreaders in my time because I'm like, well, they were rubbish. No, they were human, Claire. Don't do what I did, everyone. And then I put all those corrections in and then it should be nearly ready, right? You think, my God, it's gone through, I don't know, five different stages. It's gone through many pairs of eyes. No, it's not. It's not ready, everyone. I send it to my typesetter who lays it out for me for print. And then this is a hugely important part. I print it out on hard paper, floppy paper, not hard paper. It's not a tree. And then I read it from start to finish, which is a really painful task, I have to say. And I'm sure TB would agree with me, because by this point, you've read it so many times, you just want it to go away, frankly. But when you read it from cover to cover, you'd be amazed at the errors you find and at the repeated words and at the sentences that should just be redone. This is a really crucial stage, and even though it's been through that many people, don't miss it out. I know this from when I used to work in magazines. We used to do all our edits on a screen, but the very final edit stage was always print it out and read it, and it's amazing what you pick up. And then I put in the final corrections and into print, into the ebook, and then I upload. So by the time I hit publish, I'll have gone through at least five edits, maybe more. Some people do less, some people will work with beta readers, but for me, I couldn't do that. I have to have an editor and proofreader and a first reader. My minimum viable product is a word you hear a lot in self-publishing space these days, but for me, that's not good enough. It has to be the best I can possibly be for that book. So one other key stage that I have done before, and we've talked about this, but I don't tend to do it now because it takes too much time, but I really should, especially now my books are going into audio, is reading it aloud. You'll pick up so many things there, but it's really hard to make yourself do that one as well.
It is. And listening to your process, it's almost identical to mine.
Okay.
I was like, wow, yep, do that, yep. Tick, 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 tick. Well, the main difference, well, I have two. In the beginning, when I would, I think we've learned that I'm kind of a nervous Nelly when it comes to my stories.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, when I first started writing my novels, I used to hold on to it too long. I wouldn't release it to my first readers until I thought it was the best it could be, which is never going to be the best it can be until you get input. And so I had to learn to release the book earlier. I would do a draft, then I would fiddle with it, and then I would let it go and not let my wheels spin too much. So I had to learn to let it go out to that vital, like, I think I also used 2 readers. Sometimes I used 3, depending on the difficulty I had with the draft. Mm-hmm. But I send it out at least to 2. One of them is my editor, and another one is an author friend. Sometimes my partner will read it and everything. So that's one change I've made, letting it go sooner. And then when you send it to Kindle to read it on a screen, I've been having a lot of problems with my eyes lately and migraines. Mm-hmm. So I, unfortunately for the environment, have started printing it at that stage. And then at the end, like when you're doing the print, I take the paper I printed on one side and I flip it over and I print it again to save the paper at least. Mm-hmm. But I have to read it on paper twice. Otherwise, I will suffer from migraines, which is not fun.
No.
Not fun at all.
No.
So I think that's the changes. Other than that, I think we have pretty much the same process where I send it to the ARC team when the proofreader gets it and mm-hmm. all of that.
Right. There you go. Isn't that weird? Because not everybody will have the same revision process. It's quite, a lot of people would say it's quite long-winded, you know, and it goes through a lot of stages. But there you go. Maybe we're both perfectionists, aren't we? Probably.
That, and like, we've never talked about a revision process together, I don't think. So no. When I was listening to it, I was like, wow, yeah, that's okay. Yeah, but it is a painful process, I'm not going to lie. When you're going through the revision process, even when you're reading your own words back the first time, that first draft, we keep saying it over and over and over, it's shitty. And that's the way it's supposed to be. Like,
it is.
It's pretty much a brain dump. You can't, I mean, I know there are people who write cleaner copy, but I think they spend a significant amount of more time of plotting. Because I do some plotting. I mean, some of the people's, their beats are just, like, so detailed. I'm like, what? That's pretty much the novel. Why did you spend that much time? And that's just their process. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't criticize it. This is not what my process is.
Yeah. And I think people are scared of revision process because I think a lot of people might write their first draft. And believe me, that's quite a feat in itself, getting to the end. So well done. But you write it, then you read it, and you think, oh, my God, this is a ton of shit. What? Who's going to read this? And the answer is no one but you, so don't worry about it. Actually, I quite love the second and third revisions I make now because actually that's where the magic happens. That's where you clean up your mess and you put in the gold. And it's all about all these things that you can foreshadow. You know, like you've got this thing at the end and you're like, maybe you've put in a character with like 5 chapters to go. And they've never been in your novel before. That's not good. You should never introduce anybody that late in the day. But what you can do is go back, if you like them that much and it's a crucial bit of the story, go back and introduce them in chapter 2 and then they're there. And give them a reason to be there. And then you're there. And then when you bring them back in for this crucial bit at the end, everyone will go, my God, she's so clever. What a clever writer. But you're not. You're just fixing your mistakes in the second edit and the third edit. And that is the beauty of revision. And that's why given time and the more further on you down the books you go, you will learn to love it. Even though it is always, I think I find the third revision the hardest. Because you've just read it, you've just done it, then you've read it through and you've made all the changes and you think, oh, I'm quite pleased with that. And then you go for third and you go, for fuck's sake, what on earth was I thinking?
Yeah, I've hit that before. And I like what you said, that you now look forward to the revision process. I used to dread it. I used to dread getting like comments back because I was kind of fearful, like, oh, God, it's terrible. I know it's terrible. Now I love getting the comments. I let it percolate in my mind for a few days. During this time, I go for a lot of long walks. And depending on how many comments I got, like sometimes I can just let it sit for a day or sometimes I've let it sit for like a week. Yeah, but watching it change from that first to the end is just like mind-blowing. It's such an incredible experience when you finally get it to where you want it to be to release it. When you get to that stage, it's euphoric.
Yeah, totally. But there are lots of hurdles to jump. And so I think a lot of people get put off by the revision process. But you shouldn't be put off by the revision process because, like we say, it is actually where the magic happens.
That's going to have to be the tagline for this episode.
There you go. They're just dripping off my tongue today. Book Stuff and Thundergun and Where the Magic Happens. You can choose which one
you
use.
Are you on cold medicine?
I am on cold medicine, yes.
I think you should take it more.
And cod liver oil. I've just started taking that for my creaky joints.
I thought you started that a while ago. Did you stop?
I did start it, but then I kept getting migraines, and that was the only thing I changed in my diet, so I just decided to stop. So I've restarted just to see. So if I start getting migraines, and then I came down with a cold, so clearly cod liver oil and me, I'm not friends.
That sounds terrible. Just terrible. I'm assuming this is like a pill.
Yeah, and when you think about what cod liver oil is, like, it's just one of those terms that rolls off your tongue, but if you actually go back and cod, the oil from a cod's liver, I mean, that's not nice, is it?
No, I don't want it in my body. No.
And also with the revision process, we should say that you will spend, like, you know, people think writing is just the first draft, but you will spend most of your time writing in revision. So if you don't love it already, you should really learn to love it. Otherwise, you're not going to like this job very much, or you're not going to like this hobby, whatever it is to you. So, you know, yeah, I'd say it's time to revise your mindset on revision.
Oh, yeah, another one. Wow. I'm going to have to start insisting you take cod liver oil and cold medicine. So that's just about it with the whole revision process. And I don't know what we're mentioning next week.
Do you think maybe, let's ask the listeners a question, TB. What do you think? Tell us, write in and tell us, or comment on the episode on the website or on the podcast app you've got, and tell us how you feel about revision. Are you in the first stages of it? Has your revision process changed? Do you have a favourite part of it? Tell us how you feel, because I think that, you know, it's an always evolving thing, revision, but it is inevitable. Because it's sort of 90% of writing. 80%? Let's say 80.
It is the big bulk of writing, like you say. If you don't like the revision process, this is not going to be a fun job or hobby for you, because even when we're doing, what have we been doing, updates each episode, usually one of us is in the editing stage.
Yeah.
That's revision. So it is. It's something you can't escape.
Do you know what I think it is? I think it's the word revision, because, you know, I associate that with exams. And so people don't like it. We need a new word, don't we? Because revision is, if you look at it, actually, I'm looking at the word now, right? And if you look at it, it's revision. So you're reimagining. Maybe we should call it reimagining, and then it would be cooler.
That would have a more magical feel to it.
You do.
But what do you mean with exams?
When you revise for exams, so you have to do revision for exams.
I think this is a British thing.
Okay. TV is looking at me like I'm bonkers. So when you do, I don't know what else to call it but revision. When you study for exams, we call it revision. We call it revising.
We call it cramming.
Okay.
There you go. You do it the night before and you're cramming for an exam.
Well, there you go. So there you go, listeners. This is a little known Brit-US divide. But yeah, when you cram... I'm glad it's not called cramming, because that sounds even worse than revision. So, yeah. But if you are British, don't let the word revision put you off. But if you're American, carry on. Next time round, we're going to be discussing self-doubt and how we deal with it. And TB, this one's just for you.
You did that on purpose.
It's on our list. I can't veer off the list. So tune in then. Thank you for being with us this week. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Lesbians Who Write. Listen in every week for more conversations on writing and lesbian fiction. And you can make sure you never miss an episode by signing up to our newsletter at lesbianswhowrite.com. Also, if you could take a moment to leave a review wherever you listen to this podcast, it would help more people to discover us. Thanks so much, and see you next time.